Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. It's Dan. I have John. And you might know this guy, the Illini Oracle, Robert Rosenthal, joining us. Welcome on in.
You know, I don't know if I've ever done video. I'm trying to think. I don't know. Like, I've joined many podcasts and they've like asked me to do video. And I'm like, guys, I don't do video. Like, and I've never posted. I don't think I've ever done. This is the first ever video podcast.
I figured that if we just kind of do it and just tell you to join and we just put it out, you don't have to do anything except show up and talk about Illini football. You might actually like it.
I mean, I just don't look how much space my head takes up compared to your two heads. Like, just look at it. That's unbelievable. Yeah. Look at that thing.
I think Zoom's got some animations where we can maybe shrink your head a little bit. I mean, like a Snapchat filter.
I'll try and work on the back end.
Like I look like, you know, like a kid's Lego toy, like a bobblehead kind of thing.
Yeah, we could probably do that. John, oh my gosh. Post edits, you got that?
AI can do anything.
We'll just make him into a bobblehead. And anytime he talks, the head just wobbles up and down.
Just look at these two backgrounds, John and I.
I like you're doing video. Is this where I tell people that my wife calls Bayless Superman's son?
Wasn't that talked about? I think I wasn't there on that podcast, if I'm remembering correctly. Yes. I remember listening back because it's the one miss that I've had.
My wife and her friend at the, because the hair was all just like at that one tailgate. And they're like, that's like Clark Kent hair. And so they started calling you Superman's son.
And I think she appreciated how firm a handshake I gave her.
Oh, there you go. Perfect.
I think that's why, because I don't discriminate. Yep. Man, woman, however you choose to be identified, I'm giving you a firm handshake.
All right, good times.
All right, Robert, tell us about Durham. Tell us about Illini road crowds. Was that the best road crowd you've seen aside from, you know, a bowl game, let's call it?
Northwestern is all, like, Wrigley, obviously. But that's just Illini fans leaving their house and going to Wrigley. This is Durham, North Carolina. Easily the biggest the biggest I've ever been around. Like, the biggest in 25, 30 years. I can't remember. I mean, look, it might be the biggest of my lifetime. Like home crowds in the 80s were great, but I don't remember reports of, like, 6,000 or 8,000 Illini fans going to North Carolina to watch a football game, you know. Like, it was from the moment I got there on the plane, in the terminal. Like, I'm walking to the island at RDU for the rental car shuttle on Thursday night, and some guy just, like, rolls down his window as he's driving past and gives me an ILL. And then I get on the shuttle with Alec Bryant's uncle, and he's talking about the game, and I'm inviting them to the tailgate. And then I get to the hotel lobby, and it was just nonstop Illini fans at lunch on Friday at the Harris Teeter grocery store when I stopped to get stuff for the tailgate. Like, everywhere I went, it was Illini fans. And then, I mean, I think people saw at the game what it was. It was insane.
I guess I didn't set this up well, because if we want to talk priorities, let's, I guess, start with $100 million donation that just happened.
I was going to say, if we want to talk about program momentum, like, yes, it's great to have, you know, a couple thousand fans go to a game, but nine digits, 100 milli going to the athletics.
Yeah. I mean, I hope everybody, I'm going to try to, I might actually let you do it. So Dan, you've got the Field Pass Twitter account verified, right?
Yes.
Yep. I'm going to send it to you then. So the clip of my question and Whitman's answer is like 4.5 minutes long, and I can't post a 4.5 minute video because I refuse to verify, because I'm that guy, stodgy old 52-year-old man. So, but Whitman's answer was so good to what I asked him of, like, it was kind of a, what's happening here? Because 91 million six, seven, 8 years ago was the entire athletic department budget. He said that, I mean, he said this year we'll get close to 190 million. He said 25, 26, they're anticipating over 200 million. So it's not just this donation, it's our ticket sales category has skyrocketed. Our donations have skyrocketed. Our merch has maybe doubled. The licensing stuff coming back from, you know, if you go around Champaign, there's like two Rally House stores now that are massive, one in the mall, one over off North Prospect. Like you go to Dick's Sporting Goods, they have a huge Illini. Like the number of places you could buy Illini gear is massive. And then I'm sure the licensing fees are rolling in from that. So every category has just jumped. I mean, donations from people to be part of the reseeding of both stadiums, selling out football games. Like, I don't want to have Bayless pass out too early here. But I wrote about this in the spring and the summer. We're not shooting for Iowa or Wisconsin here. Like, we're shooting for, hey, Ohio State, Penn State, Michigan, they have used their states with 10 million or more people to max out their revenue. We have 13 million people in Illinois, and we're now going to finally tap into that. And we would like to be knocking on your back door soon. Like, I'm not sitting here saying that Illinois football is going to be Michigan or Ohio State or Penn State. I'm saying, like, athletic department wise, we are getting there. Like, how many years have I written about a sleeping giant? And that's, you know, $100 million just a donation for the football program? Like, selling out three games, number nine in the country? It's like, what?
Keep going.
Yeah.
Luke for Heisman,
Yes.
playoff potential.
I mean, what is happening? You know? So I just wanted to point to that's why I asked that question of Whitman. Is like, this is not just this donation. All those numbers that I quoted were before any of this money came in. Now they can, you know, there's the accounting thing of like, do they, if they want to impress people, do they put a half of his donation in the 2026 numbers? And like, you know, like, oh,
Right.
Illinois athletic budget was 236 last year, you know, whatever. Who knows how that will happen? But year over year over year, the growth. Again, I looked it up. 2019, we were the number 44 athletic department in revenue, 43 teams more. Next year, 10, 8? Like, seriously, 10 or 8? Like, I don't think people fully grasp. I'm looking at this stuff every day. I don't think people fully grasp how far we've leapt. Like, not just the wins, not just anything else, but like where we're at financially and our strength and why Whitman invested in letting Bielma add two position coaches for every single position. Why he added, you know, Pat Embleton told me his staff is 16 people now. When he in 2019, it was three, him, James Kirtland, and Nate McNeil. Like, I don't think people fully grasp where this has like gone to financially, to where Iowa and Michigan or Iowa and Minnesota and Wisconsin and maybe even Nebraska are looking across at Illinois athletics and like, whoa, Josh has that thing rolling. And so, yeah, I mean, that's what today was. Like, that's why this is like a, I just, you know, 44th best, 44th most money brought in by the athletic department felt exactly right in 2019. You know, 2019 was Io hitting the this won't end well for Illinois shot when we are what? We were like 4-13 at the time or whatever. You know, like 2019 was Lovie going 6-6 to get to a bowl, and we're all going crazy because we actually got six wins. And now we're 6 years later, and we've doubled from when Whitman took over the budget, and we've gone from 44th to, I'm guessing, like when the 2025 numbers come out, we'll be like 14th or something, and then might jump into the top 10 in the athletic department revenue. It's insane.
I'll
Insane.
tell you, the moment I knew that Illinois athletics was back, I think I actually sent you this text, Robert, a couple months ago. In the PGA Tour Superstore in Lincoln Park, Chicago, there was
Yes.
one college golf bag, and it wasn't Notre Dame, it
That's
wasn't
right.
Northwestern, it was an Illinois golf bag. And that's when I knew that was the barometer, but that's all you need to see.
Stores having Illini gear, people around town wearing Illini gear. Like, I was just that guy in St. Louis, just the only guy in St. Louis wearing Illini gear every day. And now I'm back visiting my son and I see 20 Illini shirts. I still can't come up with words to talk about how far we've advanced. And a day like today, $100 million donation is just an advancement of that, of like people are all in on this program.
Well, as the resident accountant, I'm not too up to snuff on my nonprofit accounting rules, but I do know I worked with one for a couple years, so I know that, donations and budgeting. I think what you just proposed is a perfect way to keep the hunger going for keeping this thing rolling. Because if you do just go like 50 mil over 2 years, then you have to keep raising the budget. You can't have the budget go
Sure.
down in
Yes.
3 years. So
Yes.
then yeah, that's going to keep Josh hungry. Like he's got to go get another big fish. He's got to go
Yeah.
get another two big fish. And then, and does this sound maybe a little bit like, I don't want to use the word pyramid, but keeping it up,
I know what you're saying. Yeah.
I'm just
Yeah.
saying, you keep that money rolling in
Yes.
and you keep having to, oh yeah, well, this is over a couple of years. You just make it 1 or 2 years and then, oh, well, we need to increase the budget by 10%. All I'm saying is, maybe throw Shad a line. Maybe I'm sure Larry Ellison, I know that he threw money towards Michigan, but maybe get him back around and
Yeah.
then you're really rolling in it. And then you're going $300 million, 350.
Right.
Then you
Yeah.
can make Oregon blush.
That's right. There you go. Hey, Shad,
Robert.
I don't know, like Larry Gates gave 100 million. Stand up a little bit, Bayless. Let me see the shirt. Yes, there are now, I would like to note for everyone, there are now more than 17 Illini fans who care more about. I mean, it was always a kind of a joke, but it's just crazy to me that there's no way I could like start that phrase in 2025. Like,
It's so beautiful.
I just wrote it down in 2009 and no one questioned it because everyone was still like obsessed with everything basketball recruiting and this and that. And the fall, nobody paid attention to football, nobody cared. And so yeah, it's crazy where we've gone in 15, 16, 17 years, whatever. It's nuts.
Robert, let me ask you. If you were in charge of renovations and you had $100 million sitting in a bank account for Memorial Stadium, Gies Memorial Stadium, where are you investing that money? What are we looking at? I saw Whitman talk about, video boards, putting a bunch of new video boards in. I know you've forever talked
Some
about the
lights.
South End Zone and getting people closer to the field, but where would you allocate those resources?
First, it needs to be known that like part of this is they will use the money to hire the architecture firm to like study it and design what would be next. And so like this is not a Illinois is about to do $100 million. If this was that press conference, there would have been renderings, there would have been, this is not that one. Two, they have said part of this money will go to things they already had ordered. So next year is the new video board sound system. They're doing ribbon boards. They're doing the lights. I mean, the lights you see at college games where the touchdown is scored and suddenly it's flashing orange and red and everything else. Those are coming next. Yes, yes, yes. How did you do
Yeah.
that? Is that AI? I'm just kidding. So that's coming, and more TVs up under the overhangs are coming. Like that's been designed and planned for a while. They're just saying like, well, now that we have this money, some of it will be allocated toward that. But to answer your question, the biggest thing I would do, They got to fix the portals somehow. It was like the line on my corner that I go in on the northwest corner, the line was down almost all the way to the street. I'm going
Wow.
to say impy, you guys say arc, but from that corner all the way down the sideline or sidewalk next to the building, I just can't bring myself to say arc.
That's okay, we will.
Okay. There's ways. Look, I'm a registered landscape architect, folks. Like, there's ways to do entry portals for stadiums that are a little more permanent and that have a little better flow than just here's the four sidewalks on the four corners. Let's put some tents up there and have some students stand with scanners and let people in. So, you could do a lot better if you're going to be selling out to do that. The big change is obviously it's, 40 yards of football field behind the goalpost till you get to the front row of the stands of the horseshoe. So you can redo the entire South Horseshoe and bring it in. But note that Whitman in the press conference said, hey, we just poured $4 million into new restrooms, new concessions back there. We're not ready to just tear that out. And, so what they would do is probably not going to be like a full tear down of the area, but maybe an expansion of the stands there. But that's all what these look. I was part of these kind of drawing packages before. I wasn't doing stadiums, but I would be part of a park district would hire us to do something, and we could just the first phase is like, what do you think of this? What do you think of this? What do you think of this? So that's this first design phase is like, okay, we think the stadium works well here, but we think you could take the existing horseshoe as it is and extend the seats all the way down to the surface and just do a tunnel in the middle and get first phase you get another 16 rows of seats that get a lot closer to the field, and then we could extend this out a little more flat into a party porch and all that kind of stuff. So they're going to study all of that and do those things. And, it's not cheap to hire those architecture firms. So this gives the freedom to do that. So I think they'll look at external entry as a big part of this. And then, the big question is that. One last thing on that, the South End Zone, remember, originally the South End Zone was going to be the Smith Center. They were going to do new stands above, and then everything that's in the Smith Center was going to be underneath the South End Zone. And Lovey wasn't in favor of that because he wanted the practice facility attached to the indoor. And so that's why they moved it to where the Smith Center is located. And so there's still that possibility with this stadium of if you redo the horseshoe, you have a pretty enormous multi-story building underneath that could be something for athletics. So, maybe there's a hey, let's add a few more seats to the horseshoe now. And the 8-year plan is a fully renovated horseshoe where the new wrestling facility is underneath there or whatever, something like that. So that's what they're going to be studying.
I saw you tweet out the word cathedral in association with the stadium earlier today, and I couldn't help but it's not necessarily a one-to-one comparison because Notre Dame that was part of a huge accident, but the restoration and renovation of that, thinking about how this is, might be looking back on it and seeing a very storied stadium, but the update and seeing something, I just really hope that they get rid of all that dead space because yeah, I'm sure the you would know better than either of us, but because I know you can't like grade something and then just kind of flatten it out
Yes,
for 40 yards.
yes.
And yeah, maybe you keep those bathrooms in there and then maybe dual level it. I have no idea.
Yep.
Smarter minds than me will figure that out. But you, I feel like that's the quick fix that they almost like need to make as this program moment. Like we have, we can say we have a top 10 program right now. This is exactly where you need to start capitalizing because this is like, you were saying Iowa, Wisconsin, like they would get sniffs of this and then they'd come into Champaign and get upset in 2019 where the field pass was birthed as a number three team. So that's not going to happen to us anymore. But you know, this is where you need to capitalize on that so you don't fall into a similar trappings of just, oh, well, we're satisfied with being, you know, a consistent top 25 program, maybe sniffing the playoff every so often, which I understand that, like, past that, above that is essentially becoming a blue blood. But why not aim to achieve that? Like, what is stopping us from looking back in 25, 50 years and saying, oh, yeah, I mean, obviously, the three of us would know that it started before the donation, but to those who are not real ball knowers, they would maybe look and say, oh yeah, they got this $100 million donation. And while they were a top 10 program, and that launched them into a different stratosphere. Like, I don't understand why people wouldn't want to dream that big. So it's something where but to capitalize on that, to keep the stadium full, to keep butts in seats, you got to get the, those horseshoe seats extended as close to the end zone as soon as possible, in my opinion.
I agree with that. Yeah. Look, some team is going to expand. Some team is going to take advantage of the new rules and the new way college football works and become a monster program. Why not us? Right? You know, it's going to be somebody in the Big Ten or the SEC because that's where the money is.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yep.
Really pretty much impossible for Wake Forest to do that. It's really not even possible to do it at Baylor. I mean, like, you have to have the TV money, you have to have the conference, you have to have, that's just how it's all going to work now. So why not, you know, you sat down with Josh Rutten today and got him to say, like, his plan, I guarantee, is like, no, this is an opportunity for us to put us up there with everybody else where we were in the 20s or whatever. And, you know, we're a big state with a big alumni base and a large school. We should be up there. There's no reason we're not. We can reach heights that Minnesota can't, that Purdue can't, that, you know. So let's take advantage of all of it and get there. And that's what he's trying to implement.
I just thought of a potential idea for the money. Let me know what you guys think of this one. Tunnel system from the Smith Center across underneath the field. Mm-hmm. Similar to a concert or the Super Bowl where a musical artist will come up out of the floor on one of those rising platforms. We have that on the sideline. And then when we have the LED lights that go dark, spotlight, Brett Bielema comes up out of the turf with an orange spotlight on him. The whole crowd goes crazy. I think that's a good use of the money, in my opinion.
Look, tunnel to the Smith Center. People listening to this who've read me for like 10 years, like in 2016 or whenever the first renderings of the Smith Center went out, I proposed exactly that because when the talk was, hey, we're going to put all the new locker rooms, everything under the south end zone, then there was going to be a tunnel there and the team would have come out of the horseshoe in that tunnel. And that's where the team would have come in and come off the field. They said, well, we're going to move this over there. And my first question was like, okay, well, if the locker room is going to be on the horseshoe, does that mean the locker room is like across the sidewalk over by the Irwin indoor football facility? Which the answer was yes. And so then once that answer came out, I'm like, okay, you know, how about a tunnel so that they don't have to walk over the sidewalk? Now, did I have the Gangnam style guy jumping up out of the floor to start a concert like Bielema doing that? I did not think that far in my dream.
But you could see the vision, right?
Yes, but I'm now 100% in. I'd be mad if it doesn't happen.
Listen, we know that you have a direct line to the big man.
Yes.
If you can just plant the seed. It doesn't even, just like how you probably influence our subconsciouses enough with like the talk of the tunnel. Like, I'm sure Dan and I were reading you in 2016 and maybe that just percolated. And now you can maybe plant something about, maybe just send him the video. Cause I actually saw the side jumping out of randomly gets reposted on Twitter or Instagram. Just like send him one of those and see how he reacts to it. And then, you know, a couple years down the road, maybe we get.
I may have already suggested to him that he should come in on the fire truck. So,
that would be sick.
He might get a little tired of
the theatrics.
Yes, of how to stadium. But I mean, look, I was waiting outside the locker room, and it was too late for the press conference. I didn't even go. I don't want to be that. You've seen me walk into press conferences before and interrupt, and he has to say something. So I just stayed outside. When he's done, he came out there. First thing he says to me is like, did you drive the fire truck here? I'm like, dude, like we're talking like $1,000 of gas in like 20 hours to get it here. He's like, well, how about Indiana Purdue? And I'm like, we're getting there. We're getting there. So if I ever do take it to a road game, I'm gonna ask him, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna bring it. You get a pass from Purdue so I can park it on the sideline.
Hey, big
On the
drum versus the
trajectory.
truck.
Actually, what I want to do at Purdue, I don't know if you ever know this, they have this like Thomas the Train looking thing that drives around with a little horn that like high pitched, and they just drive around town and people cheer when it goes by. What if? What if I take the fire truck and I chase that thing around West Lafayette and just hit the siren? What if?
Worth going to jail for. I would say
100%. 100%.
if they put a boot on the fire
I mean,
truck,
people would bail me out.
exactly. We'll raise money to get the thing out of impound. We'll get you
100%.
out of jail. That
100%.
easy money. You,
100%.
that's amazing.
Should we talk about the actual football team, or is that not something you guys do anymore?
We're only
People don't
ranked number
really care about
nine.
that. We just
Well,
win, so it doesn't really matter.
we are 34 minutes is the new number.
Hey.
Of when my wife lands at the airport and I have to be there picking
All
her up.
right, time's ticking. But I guess two games in, pulse check. What stands out? What's your big takeaway here, two games in, now that you've had a chance to learn a little bit about this team, both, with a non-con, easy game, and then a real test, in Durham this past week.
For anyone who read the preview, you know that I started out with this whole thing about yards and footballing and how, we actually gave up more yards last year than we gained, but we went 10 and 3 because we were so good at all the other stuff. And then we're not obviously not gonna learn anything against Western Illinois. But then in the second game against Duke, we do that exact game again, right? Like their final completion gave them more yards than us, which I mean, whatever. We had a 18-yard touchdown drive and a 22-yard touchdown drive. Like when you force turnovers in the red zone, yards numbers are going to look a little funny. They're not going to match your score, but still, even on yards with Duke, and yet we still like fully in control of the game most of the second half. Like even when it was whatever 28-19, you still felt good about, I'm not sure they're gonna score much. They're just getting a bunch of empty yards between the 20s. And that was even before their final three turnovers. It was just kind of like, yeah, they might have a bunch of field goal attempts, but I'm not. What did they score on fourth down on one touchdown? And was it fourth down on the other touchdown? No, third down on the other touchdown. What they were, those two throws from
The
this
toe
game.
tap.
Yeah, a toe tap with an inch and then a fourth down catch. If they don't convert either of those and only get one field goal out of those two, we're talking, what, 45-9 or something like that, 45-6. So, this was a full domination because of the turnovers. And again, the feel of the game was, even when we're not playing well, we're not panicked. We're just, this system works and it will come around. Just this very calm, like, okay, they're playing a different run defense than we expected. Let's shift to this. These slants are now wide open. Okay, Altmaier missed the slants, but we're gonna talk about his mechanics at halftime, and where he's gonna have a much better second half. And he's just a very calm, no panic. We can adjust to this. We have a lot of options because we have a lot of depth, and we'll figure it out. That's the feel. So that's my feel after these first 2 weeks is there's just a very calm, like, no, we can figure that out. Okay, that's interesting. Oh, that run, offensive line. Well, let's try this. Okay. There's no like, oh my God, what will we do? If we don't have the offensive line for this, what are we, are we 10 games with no run? There's none of that. It's just a very calm, I mean, we have options, so let's employ some of those options. So
Speaking of
I don't know what
options,
you guys think. I know what I think. What do you guys think?
I wanted to get your take specifically on wide receivers because I know that you have a connection with the JUCO guys, Mario Sanders, ACJ, and I would say it's a sign of health of the program that those guys aren't necessarily needing to be relied upon yet. It's not to say that they can't be, but it was I think that's one of the things that I pegged when, reading your practice notes or reading the preview, that I was curious to see how that balance, and I it's still ongoing, obviously. I mean, I think Hudson Clement is a guy who showed a lot of flashes and even had the opportunities in week one where he might have just not gotten thrown the best balls and he might be the breakout number one. And it would be great if Hank Beatty has over 200 receiving yards and somehow gets overtaken, then that means that we've got multiple 1,000-yard wide receivers probably. But I wanted to kind of that was one of those where I feel like the group was probably one of the more unknowns, and you had like the defensive line rotations, but that at least you knew because of the rotational nature, which you could say about wide receivers, but more so the top dogs you knew on the defensive line, the top dogs in the wide receiver room, very big unknown. So that's, I think, the only thing that it's a much more granular than Dan's question, but just like your take on that group as a whole.
You're right. I really like. I want ACJ in there. I like. I saw Lonnie the other day leaving the press conference, and I was just getting there, and I all like. I stopped myself, but I almost like, hey, play my guy ACJ, and then it's like, what are you thinking? Like you're gonna like tell him like, because
You can
you're
tell
fleeing,
us.
you want the senior to have a moment, like, so I'm very glad that I didn't. But yeah, I mean, honestly, compared to what I saw in camp, Elzy's probably impressed me the most. The two catches in this one, but the shoestring catch against Western Illinois, it was such an athletic, like, that ball is absolutely hitting the turf, and only a few receivers have the athleticism to dive, grab it, and immediately like pull it into their chest before they're trapping it against the ground. And he did that. And I even gave it a little like in the stands. I was like, whoa, like a, oh, that is that right there. There's a 4-star wide receiver, somebody who can make that dive and twist and keep that ball from hitting the ground. I'm like, okay, he's very acrobatic and a big guy and strong. And so in camp, he had some issues and, obviously there were injury issues and other things, but in camp he was struggling a little bit. And I wasn't sure he would, he was 5 or 6 in the receiver rotation. And now he's probably 4 in the receiver rotation, maybe 5 behind Boak. But I've been pretty impressed with what he's been able to do, and I'm hopeful that that gives us another option.
I go back and forth between the having two go-to guys like we did last year versus having just kind of a platoon of guys who are all relatively close in, talent and ability. And I honestly don't know which one's the you'd rather have the go-to guy and kind of that alpha that we had in Pat Bryan and, that number two in Zachary, or do you like having a full, group of guys who can get out there and, take a play off and go get a water break while someone else who's equally talented comes right in.
I always want a number one. Like, I always want 3rd and 7. Just get it to him. He'll get the first down. I always want that guy. So I'm really happy with Beatty's first 2 weeks. It's just like the bowl game. As soon as Pat went out in the bowl game, Beatty steps up in the Citrus Bowl, has a huge game, and then, same these first 2 games. So huge, huge fan of that. I do like having a deep rotation behind that number one. So I guess my answer is kind of a hybrid thing that I like
We
the
want
idea.
all of it.
Yes. I do want a number one. I don't necessarily need like two main guys. I need one main guy. I need the dependable guy. I need the guy that we're going to say 2014 was Mikey Dudak. 2011 was, or 20, yeah, 2011 was AJ Jenkins. 2001 was Brandon Lloyd. 2007 was Aurelius Ben. I like identifying 2024 was the Pat Bryant year. 2023 was Isaiah Williams' year. I like being able to identify who that guy was across these seasons. 89, Bellamy, okay. Throw a number, throw a year. I'm just gonna sit back here. I'm gonna give you the wide receiver for that. I have to answer within 2 seconds.
All right, I'll go with 2003.
Kendrick, the kid from East St. Louis. Oh my God, I can't think of his name. Hold on.
Stump the Schwab here.
Oh my God. You guys are too young to even remember.
No, I was just throw a year
Yeah,
out there.
I'm Googling furiously right now.
Okay. It's just to Illinois football 2003 wide receiver Kendrick. Or wait, was Kendrick his brother who was on Illini board? His brother was on Illini board all the time. Like, give me one.
It did start with a K.
What is it?
Kelvin Hayden.
Oh no. Oh, Hayden, he was a, I thought in 03 he was a he switched to DB.
It's saying receptions 52 for 592 in 2002.
Okay,
Illinois
I'm going
Fighting
to do
Illini.
my own Googling.
One
Give
and
me a
11.
minute.
One and 11.
I was
Not
going to
a great
say,
year, Dan.
Robert, you may maybe time for a checkup there.
Yeah,
The
100%.
brains. You picked a 1-11 season, Dan. That's on you.
That's why I went for it. That's why I went for it. That's
I was
where
thinking
the real ones
'97.
down.
Okay, let's see if we can get a redemption. 1997, while you're Googling, Robert.
Oh, sorry. I'm
Ni
sorry.
97. 2 seconds.
You just give me
1997.
an 0-11 team. Let's see.
Oh,
97 was
this
Dulich
game's fun.
full year? No,
I'm
Dulich
enjoying
was
this.
gone by then. You guys are giving me 03 through 1-11 and 97 when we're 0-11.
Didn't even. I'm sorry. This is me being a bad
This would
historian.
97 would be hold on, hold on. It's Marquise Mosley. No. 97, the
It was a
leading.
running back.
I mean, that's Robert Holcomb,
Number
God, did we
two.
throw the ball in 97? I don't. Okay, it's a trick question. We had no receptions by any receivers in 1997.
Lenny Willis.
Oh my gosh.
These are
Oh my
some deep
God.
cuts.
Never
Some
heard
deep
that name in
cuts.
my life.
Well, Jacob Willis, his brother, who maybe fumbled in the Rose Bowl and lost us the momentum. But anyway, continue.
Yeah. All right.
Give
Receivers.
me another year.
All
Give me
right.
another year. I
Let's
gotta redeem myself here.
how far back are we allowed to go here?
To 91.
All right. How about
99?
I mean, Brandon Lloyd as a true freshman.
Yeah. How about 2010?
I mean, that would have still been AJ Jenkins, I think. I think he would have had
Michael Dean.
a lot of games.
99 was Michael Dean.
Michael Dean was a leading receiver over Lloyd.
43 receptions for 566 yards.
What did
Lloyd
Lloyd
had
have?
454 on 27 receptions.
Got it.
He was
Okay.
number three.
All right. Number one, Michael
Elmer
Dean.
Hickman was number two in there. Elmer Hickman, what a name.
I was just catching balls out of the backfield.
All
That was
right,
the
I gotta.
Ron Turner threw the fullback more than you guys can even possibly imagine.
We should bring that back. When we're on
No.
our third national championship in 5 years, we'll
Just
bring back the
run with
fullback.
a throw to the fullback offense.
Does Jordan Anderson count as a fullback? He's kind of that
Yeah.
John Davis
I count him.
breed.
H back.
Yeah. Let me ask
Give me one
Luke
more.
Altmyer.
Give me one
Oh.
more here.
All right. 94, because that was our birth year.
That'd be Jason Dulett.
All right. You
Also,
said that with
yeah,
confidence, so I
might
just
be
believe
JJ
it.
Strong. Might be Jasper Strong. It's either Dulick or
This
Strong.
is awesome. We should do this more often, Dan. Just go through old stats,
Put the Oracle to the test.
yards. Jasper Strong was the leading receiver with 679 yards on 39 receptions, but Jason Dulick had 49 receptions for 520 yards. So it
Okay.
kind of depends on whether you want to go yards or
After
receptions.
the Liberty Bowl win, the East Carolina fans had brought all these foam swords for the pirate kind of thing,
Yep.
and Jasper Strong went and grabbed one of them, ran out to the 50, faced their crowd, and ripped it into pieces.
I love college football so much. Yes. That's just, you can't do that anywhere else. Like either it's like that guy is acting weird about like something that's kind of childish, or it's like that guy's taking something way too serious. In college football, no one bats an eye at that. That's just like, yeah, that's just good old fashioned college football fun. Ah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I once went on a podcast and somebody's asked me a memory of the 94 Liberty Bowl. And my answer was the corn dogs at the stadium. Sorry, the Pronto pups that they served at the Liberty Bowl, where they're dipping it in the batter, they're dipping the hot dog in the batter as you stand there and then putting it straight into the fryer. Let me tell you, after being hungover from Beale Street, it was an adventure. Okay.
Incredible.
Hold on, we're doing wife plane location check. She is 21 minutes from Willard.
All right, 21 minutes to talk ball then. What do we want to talk? How about Luke Altmaier, like you said? I feel like, I guess the team in general, there's this kind of confidence that is weird, at least on my part as a fan, where I feel actually confident for once in a team. He still, I thought, you know, missed some throws that were typically, you know, throws he connects on, whether it's a slant across the middle. He had the Colin Dixon, you know, fake screen block where he slipped out up the seam and was wide open and kind of threw him a little too far inside. And yet he still puts up almost 300 yards. You know, a couple touchdowns, looks pretty sharp, and you know his completion percentage was still high, and yet there still seems to be another level for him and another step to take. And I still think he's potentially on Heisman watch, and the national media is not yet talking about it.
Yeah, I think I mean, this calmness that I'm talking about here, a lot of it comes from him, like just his demeanor. Like you could tell he was mad at himself on some of those throws. He even went like two hands on the helmet with that one miss slant of just like, man, that was 36 yards and I missed that. But again, I've said this so much in preseason, like this coach preaches this whole adversity thing. You know, he preaches this whole, you learn more from adversity than you do from success. And when we have these times of adversity, get excited because you're learning so much. And the team has really embraced that. Like they don't seem to have these panic, like everything's falling apart moments. I mean, we'll see at Indiana and we'll see against USC, but like they've really embraced that kind of thing of like not playing well. Okay. Well, we're probably learning a lot right now. And, you know, people take on the personality of the leaders, and Bielema and Altmaier have put forward this calmness, that's this confidence that's really interesting to watch. Does it mean, hey, we're going to go to the playoff? No. A lot of things have to happen the right way for a program to get to that point. And we've got these, you know, got a road game in Indiana coming up. We've got all that. But there is a certain take on the personality of Luke. Everybody trusts, oh, he's missing these throws, he'll figure it out. And there's just that kind of calm confidence.
I mean, I got I couldn't agree more. It's like he's making NFL level throws. That the thing that people, and I'm sure Robert, you're not as clued into like some of the I don't know, national podcasts or gambling podcasts that I like to listen to, just to kind of like gain an appreciation of what these more quote unquote unbiased people are seeing. But then of course their natural biases tend to bleed in. And a lot of people were dogging on Luke the past couple of years because of his, he would have a higher percentage of, like essentially interceptable balls that weren't getting intercepted, and they would dog him for that. And that's not to say that that might not creep up here and there in the big games, but the fact that he is now making those elite level throws like that, the one where he got crunched and threw it to within a yard of a touchdown, and Boak makes an incredible catch. But like to see that alley, like that throw is not obvious. Like that's confidence and arm talent as you're like squaring up while you know you're going to get absolutely walloped. Like that's something that I texted this to Dan, but his agent should just have that as the first highlight to any NFL GM or scout or whoever he's talking to. Just play that before you even say anything to them about Luke Altmaier, because that is just ridiculous. And yeah, he might miss a couple throws. He might miss a slant. He might miss the screen and go. And like, Yeah, you correct those over the course of the season, and that could be the difference between, you know, a special season in terms of him putting himself in that Jeff George category of, you know, another consecutive 9-10 win year, or ascending to like heights that, you know, could put him above Jeff George, like you alluded to in the preview. Like, it's something that he right might there. Have found something.
Yep. And don't forget that, you know, this is Manny Diaz, who his defense picked him off four times back in 23. So, you know, he has to feel good about a clean sheet and and everything else. You know, I think the only real bad, I don't know, I mean, he missed some throws. Only real bad decision was maybe that one that doinked off of, was it Bowick? I can't remember who the receiver was, but I think it hit off somebody's helmet or something like that and deflected kind of close to being picked off. But that was really the only, you know, yeah, he missed some slants, but they weren't interceptable balls. You know, he only really threw one pass that maybe could have been picked off. And that's, you know, against a defense that's going to blitz and do this and try to confuse you and be aggressive, and he just stayed calm.
It's weird to sit here and talk about a number nine team nationally and just the confidence we have. Like, this is kind of a Western Michigan preview episode, and I don't even feel the need to talk about it because I feel supreme confidence that we will, you know, take care of business in that one. And yeah.
Let me give you I do, hold on, let me check this again. You know, I need to leave when it's about, when our plane's about 12 minutes away. It is 14 minutes away. So,
all right, 2 minute drill with Bob.
I'll give you this and I'll go, and then you guys can finish your episode.
You only have one timeout on the clock for this 2 minute drill, just so you know, situationally here.
Okay, thank you. I probably have never said this. Like, I kind of hope we play poorly on Saturday night. Like, we can play poorly and still win easily. So, I kind of hope we have some lessons learned. I hope we have some, I don't know, turnovers where it was a funky bounce off of someone's shoulder and it ended up, they returned it to the eight, and now we gotta see if we can, you know, hold them to a field goal. Like, I would never hope for those things. 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 23, I would be like, oh, we cannot lose to the MAC opponent. You know, like, oh, it would be so Illinois to get a big win on the road and then struggle. You know, I don't have any of those emotions. I simply have, okay, let's learn as many lessons as we can. Let's get some of that stuff out of the way before Indiana. You know, like, if we're going to play a bad game in the next four or five, how about now? You know, how about we get that out of the way, and then we see, get a lot of film, play a lot of guys, get more comfortable with our rotations, and see where we're at. That's where I'm at with it. Can I call my timeout?
Timeout granted.
Okay. I just need one more year, and then I'm going to shut my laptop. I'll let Bayless call out the year. So I need one more year of you know, me picking a receiver for that.
2017.
Oh my gosh, that's a good one, because we played so many freshmen. It was supposed to be Mikey, but then injury. The leading receiver. God, we started so many. We started Carmoni Green for some games that year.
Oh yeah.
Ricky Smalling, maybe. In that, I'm looking it up.
Ricky Smalling started a lot of games that year, but I think the leading receiver was, okay, Gmo graduated in 15. Then we had that other JUCO. We played a ton of freshmen. It might be small. Who was the leading receiver?
You got it. I almost fell back. I said it before. I looked it up. It was Ricky Smalling with 510 yards on 31 receptions. And Malik had 31 receptions, but only 326 yards.
Yeah.
Number two was what could have been Lou Dorsey with 395 yards on 22
receptions. Wow.
That's a name that, you know, yes. What could have been.
Yep. All right. I got to go to the airport. You guys continue your thing. I think I'll just disappear from the screen when I click this button, and then you guys keep going.
Wait, one
Cheers.
question before you leave. Player of the game, Western Michigan. Who you got?
Malachi Hood.
All right.
Heck yeah.
We'll see you on the flip. All right. The
Wow.
Oracle, a man of many talents. Illinois receivers, memorization all the way back to 1991. It's impressive
That was
stuff.
great. That was great. We'll have to do that sometime during like the spring or summer. Just scroll through random years and find names and oh my
Yeah, well, we're
gosh, that was
celebrating
great.
the national championship. We can reminisce.
Exactly. We can talk about the darker times. Not the dark times, because there's never a dark time when you got college football, but that was some fun. But yeah, I mean, I feel I kind of echo all the sentiments in terms of Western Michigan. This is a team that they lost to Michigan State, who, they went to overtime and they won against Boston College. Boston College is not necessarily a slouch, but we performed much better against our ACC opponent. They lost to North Texas. So that's one of those where I'm not say I agree with Robert's sentiment in terms of like you got some of your tests out of the way against Duke, in the sense of like you had some adversity in the first half, you had some more boneheaded plays that cost you that you can learn from, and you still came away with the win. You might have something in Western Michigan where you have some more adversarial events that you can learn from, because you can couple that with your first road test, with then going on your first Big Ten road test to Bloomington, and hopefully put it together so that you're not making those mistakes. You're not making as many errors as the other team, which is just like the Brett Bielema hallmark, is just let the other team beat you and capitalize on those opportunities, or let the other team beat themselves and then capitalize on those opportunities so that you can win the game. So I definitely echo Robert's sentiment there. I hope it's not too much, because then you worry about like, I don't know, bad habits or overconfidence, and getting away with it, and then you're 3-0 and you think that you can just kind of not roll out of bed, but maybe you take Indiana a little bit more lightly than you should. So enough urgency that they're not having too many mistakes, but correctable ones. You should get them all out of the way now.
At the same time, Indiana's playing nobody in their first three games. So I'm thinking, they're not
Exactly.
having that adversity that they're going up against. So if we don't have that in this game, I'm not as concerned maybe as Robert is, or, I don't necessarily, I don't think I want to see a lot of mistakes. I think this team's good enough that they can play that football without the mistakes. And, yeah, they'll have adversity at some point throughout the season, but I don't think you need to make a bunch of mistakes, in this one. And
Just for
see
the
it
sake of
early
making
on.
mistakes, yeah,
Right.
I agree. I understand what you're saying though. If there was a game to make like your physical errors, or maybe a couple more mental errors, like that's the you can't have the roughing the passer when you're about to get off the field type thing. That's just a mental error. That can't happen. You can excuse physical errors. You can excuse holdings. You can excuse pass interferences. You can excuse even a roughing the passer if you're going balls out on the third and long and you're a step away and you happen to hit a guy a little bit harder, like the Johnny Newton one, like that we had a couple years ago. Like that stuff is that's not a mental error. A mental error is taking a situation like that and compounding what should be, a not great end to the half and making it even worse. Like those are the things that, yeah, get maybe a couple of those out of the way, but you definitely don't want to have that become a habit, because then that turns into, the podcast of yesteryear where we're griping about, how this team is continually beating itself, and you're hoping for like not a miracle, but you're needing to kind of like have the other team play as poorly, if not worse, for you to win. And that's just not the case, the past 8, 9 games, but you don't want to regress into any bad habits.
Yeah. And I mean, we don't have to dive too deep into Western Michigan. What I'll say though is their defense isn't bad. I mean, they contain Aiden Childs, who is a pretty dynamic, dual threat quarterback in the Big Ten. I think he only ran for 8 yards in that game on 10 attempts. I know he was sacked four of those times were sacks, but they did a pretty good job of limiting him and taking away his strength and his feet. So yeah, they're not the most talented team out there, but I do think they could, give us a few different looks to get us ready for that Indiana game. I don't anticipate Western Michigan putting up too many points against us, but defensively, I think they can pose a challenge to our offense. So we'll see how that matchup looks.
Even stylistically, to your point, like this is something where the MAC is not Big Ten play, but it's more akin to that. You're you're probably not going up against many Manny Diaz type defenses in the Big Ten. Now you're running into a lot of talent that he, you know, took to another level when he was at Penn State. I won't deny that, that you could have some dynamic playmakers that disrupt as well as, you know, a Manny Diaz defense does through scheme, but you're not necessarily running into that level of aggression on a scheme on a game by game basis. So you might get more looks on both offense and defense from a MAC school that, you know, you can kind of sift through what did work, what didn't work schematically. And you just revise your chess strategy, essentially. That's at least kind of the way I view it in terms of the stylistic nature of the matchup. It's hopefully to a point where we're not, you know, getting got too much in these MAC games. And this is avenging. What was that? Was that 2017? Speaking of 2017.
Yeah.
I think we lost to Western at home in 2017, right? Like that's, yeah. So at the very least, you know, hopefully we get, you know, some of our mistakes out of the way, but then the overarching theme is coming out for Blood to get some revenge on the demons of yesteryear.
All right. Give me your player of the game.
I will go with Khalil Valentine. I think he gets loose, has a couple big plays, 80 plus rushing yards and a touchdown and 140 all-purpose yards.
I feel like he's been getting better and better, so I like that pick. Like you can see his confidence growing with each game, and you know he's had a couple big plays. He just has that vision that isn't really taught. He has that natural running back, find the gap, shimmy his way through a hole, make something out of nothing, and it just seems like it comes naturally to him.
I think you can kind of max out that instinct a bit. Like I think Aiden Loffrey is a great example of that, where he wasn't necessarily the most natural of runners his first couple years, and now he's not ascended to like a level that it's so natural that you're thinking, oh, this is just like a sure, this isn't Chase, he's not Chase Brown level maybe yet, but hopefully he progresses to that. But that's something where, you know, he's maxed out that instinct. So hopefully you see that with a guy like him continue to progress. Same thing with Fagan. I don't know if it's necessarily as natural as it is to Khalil Valentine, who, to your point, hopefully, you know, he's got that natural instinct and continues to max it out to the point where it's just, it is Chase Brown level, where he's making holes appear where they shouldn't be and bailing out offensive line deficiencies or mistakes on certain plays. That's exciting to have a guy like that in your running back stable.
And now he's just bouncing off tackles too. Like previously he was finding holes and making the right cuts. Now he's lowering the shoulder, spinning
that
off
was awesome.
Defenders. Like that's the next level.
Mm-hmm. That and him not shying away from that contact, coming up the better man and getting fired up. Like that's just, it's such a beautiful football play that, you know, those are the kind of guys that you need to have, just because they add that extra bit of juice, that extra bit of vibes to the offensive room, so that, you know, guys block 5% harder than they maybe naturally would because they got him back there and they know he's good for a big one. So yeah, that's my player of the game. How about you?
I'm going to go with Melvin Priestley, a guy who against Duke, I thought struggled quite a bit. I mean, he had a tough task in Vincent Anthony and trying to block him more often than not. And that guy's a potential first round type of talent.
Don't disagree. Like, if he tests good. Well at the combine, he's definitely on first round radars with that size and that production, even from, you know, just a couple games in the year.
Yeah. So I like Melvin to get back on track against an inferior opponent, but try to build that confidence back up after, a tough go, honestly, for the whole offensive line against Duke, at least in the first half. I thought run blocking, we were hardly opening up any holes. Duke was getting in the backfield, making stops at the line of scrimmage. And then second half, you know, particularly the fourth quarter, similar to the Western Illinois game, where I didn't think our run blocking was all that good for the first half. We ended up, you know, getting things right and making corrections. So it's good to see that our coaching staff is able to make those adjustments. And, you know, maybe it's the fact that we're dominating time of possession and kind of wearing a team down over the course of a game, and that pays dividends later in the big moments, fourth quarter. But, you know, I'd like to see our offensive line play much better in this game, similar to, second half of the Western Illinois game or fourth quarter of that Duke game.
Or even like the second half of last year, you know, you hope that it's not a similar situation where you're needing the offensive line to gel after you return all these guys and, you know, you're still struggling early on, but it might be that way. And that is, I think we've been talking all daisies and roses and all sunshine and rainbows, but that is probably the biggest thing to look out for over the next couple of weeks is how those guys continue to progress, because it wasn't the best against a good Duke test.
Yeah. A couple of miscommunications, you know, nose tackles coming free in the A gap. Like there's stuff to be cleaned up for sure. But all right, game prediction, score prediction. What do you got in this one? Illinois 27.5 point favorites, I believe.
I'm going to go Illinois 38, Western Michigan 3.
All right. So you really don't like Western Michigan scoring many points.
I mean, the fact that they lost to North Texas, I'm not saying North Texas is necessarily a bad program, but starting 0-2, coming into Champaign against a top 10 team. And I think, once again, I'm referencing that 22 season a bunch, but I just think you saw it when they had the starters back in week one to try and stop the sad field goal from even happening. And it's like, I just think that those sad field goals are going to continue, but I'm much happier with a touchdownless streak beginning at some point in terms of the season and continuing on through hopefully Ohio State.
Yeah. All right, I'm going to go, let me see, score prediction, crunch the numbers here, 27.5 point favorites. Give me Illinois 34, Western Michigan 10. I see points here for us. Maybe get stalled out for a couple field goals, but I like a little second half working in the twos. You know, getting some more freshmen, some opportunities. You know, you got the four games you're able to use each year. So let this be one of those contests where you can bring in guys and get them experience in the second half when you're cruising pretty comfortably.
So what you're saying is that Mr. Geese shouldn't go to Indiana or another state where you can bet on Illinois football and put $100 million on the spread. You're not saying that he should do that.
You could double up, maybe that south end zone renovation. Maybe
happens a little bit quicker.
Yeah. Even the north end zone, you get the student section connected on the corners to the northeast and northwest corners of the stadium, make it a full bowl. We're selling out games. We got, you know, what, three straight sellouts now. We got plenty of people wanting to come watch Illinois football. We might as well provide some more seats for those folks.
Yeah, it's chump change, you know, when you got that kind of money, just throw it on the Illini against the spread and hopefully Dan's wrong and they win by more than 27.5 points.
Hey, I'm here for it. All right, we'll leave it at that. Illinois, 6 p.m. back. We got back-to-back night games coming up. We got this one and then Indiana, now NBC primetime. We'll talk about that next week. But 6 p.m. FS1, Illinois, Western Michigan. First ever game in Geese Memorial Stadium. We're looking forward to it. Hope you are too. Thanks for tuning in. We appreciate it. As always, and go Illini.